Cleveland Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, have you started breathing again?
I have, man. How fun was that the other night, man? Like, yeah, man, it's been a while since I had that much fun watching the Lakers, and it was really needed, especially as that first game. Like, you know how we were talking about how it feels like we're rooting for another team's players, or not, or multiple other teams' players, just not our guys, right? Like, we know they're good, but they're not our guys. And the reasons for that, games like that, you know, like we go a long way to making that attachment come about.
The person I found myself kind of rooting for more than I kind of expected to was JaVale. Like, he seemed to really enjoy being out there, just getting dunk after dunk after dunk after dunk. Like, he's gonna have, like, Wilt type of field goal percentage numbers, just because, like, all he gets are wide-open dunks playing alongside LeBron and Anthony Davis. It's hilarious.
It's so not a bad life to lead, right? Like, what does he say? He's like, I block shots, I run the floor, and I dunk on people.
I mean, it was just, I found that to be really funny, really fun to watch. Even Jen was like, he seems to be living a really good basketball life out there.
That's right. Yeah. he knows exactly where he belongs. He knows exactly what he does. And he's going to eat all year long off of that.
So today's show, the way it's going to go down, we would be remiss if we didn't kind of at least mention in passing what the Lakers might be flying into out there in China. So we're going to try to, I don't want to say tackle the subject, because I don't think it's the kind of subject matter that can be fully tackled. We're going to talk about that for a second. Then we're going to bring it back and we'll react to the game. And then finally, if we have time, you guys sent in so many questions over the course of last week that I have to now play catch up and try to answer a few questions here for today's show. So jam-packed show. It's going to be a lot of fun. Let's start, though, with this. The Lakers, I believe, are getting ready to land in China. Like, if I know as we record this right now,
like, I believe they left, I think Joey Ramirez tweeted out, let me go to Joey's timeline and see. I think they're already there.
Oh, they're already there.
I'll do some digging. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So they are already there. The reason we talk about this is because this is no longer even a basketball story. Like, this is now an international story. You have politicians on both sides of the aisle. Now, I find it ironic that you have Republican congressmen saying that you should not be muzzled while they helped muzzle Colin Kaepernick, but that's a different subject altogether. That you have a lot of people talking and coming in support of Daryl Morey, who basically said that he stands with Hong Kong. He was demanded to apologize. He sent out something close to an apology, but not quite one. The NBA sent out their version of something close to an apology, but not quite one. Nor was it a statement in support of Daryl Morey, really, either. So they're trying to kind of straddle the fence here as well. The reason it's not that I find it interesting. I don't think there is a take that can be offered here that doesn't have some inherent hypocrisy in it. And that's why, like, people are going to be expecting LeBron James, for example, to say something about this. And no matter what he says, there's going to be a hole to poke in whatever it is that he says, right? He is a part of Nike. He has like a reported $1 billion contract with Nike that is largely on the backs of cheap Chinese labor. So no matter what he says, the response is probably going to be, well, okay, but it's fine up until right now. Like, you have a problem right now with it, but that doesn't then mean that what he says can have some meaning behind it. So my thing is, I'm a little nervous. Do you find yourself nervous at all about the Lakers flying into China while all this is going? I find myself nervous about them flying into this situation.
I'm not. I think that and maybe that's tone deaf of me, and that's why I don't have much of an opinion on this either way, because the, you know, political angle of it. If I'm gonna have an opinion on something political, I'm gonna at least try to be educated on it. And on this, I'm not, right? All of the dynamics to it.
I wish more people just took that route, though. Instead of firing off takes at the hip, I would rather people just say, you know what, man, I don't. And honestly, this might be LeBron's thing. I don't know. I'm not up to date enough on this.
Everyone's. So I don't need to know this to know what I'm about to say. Everyone's trying to protect their money.
Yes.
That's what this comes down to, right? Yep. That's a massive market that the NBA have worked very hard to go into China. They're trying to go deeper into India, right? And they've done a lot of work over the last 20 years. I do not know enough about it to be like, oh, it's going to have this degree of impact, but there's certainly enough of an uproar to where they got people's attention.
Mm-hmm.
So, So this is something that, like, I think they'll be safe, but I don't think that, everybody's trying. LeBron's going to try and cover his butt. Mm-hmm. Nike, the NBA, that's where everybody's coming from. So all of the jockeying to that respect really rings hollow for me.
Yeah. No, this is my thing, and I come from a PR background. I legitimately don't know. If I was employed by the Lakers, what I would advise them to do. And then the other thing too, like with being in PR, is that, and anybody who's ever worked in PR, is the caliber of client is the one that listens to whatever it is that you tell them to do, right? You're only as good a PR specialist as the client is willing to listen to your advice. But if I was working on the Lakers PR team, I legitimately don't know, because what you get is by offering up the hollow, you know, trying to save your money while also showing trying to show respect and support for those who are having crimes of humanity carried out against them, right? Is you're not going to please either side. So my thing here is for the Lakers, get in. Play your basketball, get out.
Yeah.
You know, that's all it really comes down to. And yes, it sounds hollow of me. It sounds calloused even of me that would be my advice for them. But get in, play your basketball, and get out. Because what you don't want to do while you are literally in China is say something that pisses off the Chinese government. Like, that is not it's one thing for Daryl Morey to sit over here as far away from the situation as he was when he fired off that tweet to show support of Hong Kong when that's something that he can do out here. But you do that out there and you don't really necessarily know the ramifications of it. So get in, don't say anything dumb, get out. And that's all that I hope happens here.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a quick second here. Segue awkwardly back to basketball. There was a lot to like as we started off the show with. There was a lot of Rondo. There was not enough Caruso. So we're going to talk. Your dogs agree. There was way too much Rondo.
I swear, bro, they are two rooms away, and it's still just like freaking thunderstorm. I'm sorry, man.
No, it's cool. They. I'm just going to take it as that they agree that Rondo played too many minutes. So let's take a quick second here. When we come back, we'll talk about the game that we watched over the weekend, and then we'll answer your questions in the if we have some time in the final segment. All right, so there was a game. There was a Lakers game. So the first thing that I was looking to do when you and I were talking about previewing the game and what are our goals, not just of the Lakers, but, you know, even for ourselves, what are the things that we're going to be looking for? My number one thing was, like, just enjoy getting to watch Anthony Davis and LeBron James play basketball for the team that we root for.
Bro, that was not hard to do at all.
Yeah.
The start of that game was unbelievable, man. And just watching, like, it had like superhero qualities to it. You know what I mean? It was just like, this guy's a monster. You know, he's like this basketball superhero that's just dunking on everyone's faces. And just like, it was
Contested dunks.
Yeah, it was just, it reminded me of Shaq. Like, obviously they're different, but just that, like, rah, you know, Bynum used to do this a little bit too, where he was just physically dominant in a way that only, like, really big, talented big guys can be dominant in that way. And, bro, it was just so fun. And watching the chemistry with LeBron on top of what AD brings to the table individually, just, oh my God, just too much fun.
Actually, that's one of the places, the size aspect of this conversation is kind of where I wanted to start. I can't recall the last time. So, like, the Powell Bynum Lakers had this to a certain extent, but Powell wasn't, like, a physically dominating presence. Lamar Odom wasn't, like, a physically dominating presence. They were both big, but they weren't, like, physically dominating people. It's been a while since the Lakers have will make their name on, no, we're just going to beat the shit out of you.
Yes.
Like, we are just going to be bigger. Like, LeBron James is huge for his position when he plays small forward. Anthony Davis is huge for his position when he plays power forward. JaVale McGee isn't huge, but he's really long, and his athleticism makes him, like, it feel like a bigger presence than he actually might be physically. This is the first Lakers team that I can really recall in quite some time, maybe ever. Like, the Shaq Lakers, it was just Shaq. But I don't recall. Well, like,
Rick Fox was pretty physical for a three, right? Yeah. And Kobe could be physical, but yeah, to your point, yes, that's true.
It was, and now this was kind of a perfect storm for teams you could play against and look that physically intimidating against, right?
Right.
Like, the Warriors are not the Warriors by any stretch of the imagination, and they
were down like three bigs were out for that game, so sure.
Yeah. So, you know, that certainly helped. But one of my takeaways was it's really going to be fun to just punch teams in the face on a nightly basis. And I actually think it's going to keep our guys fresher a little bit more. Our guys, look at me. The Lakers are good for one game, and I'm out here going
we. And Anthony's like talking in we, you MF-er.
But did that strike you at all? Like, while the game was going on, did that strike you? Like, holy crap, these guys are huge.
Yeah, no, that's something really apparent on TV, and I'm looking forward to seeing them in person because there's a speed to them on top of that makes them look bigger. Mm-hmm. Like, JaVale runs the floor so well, AD does too, and neither of them are like particularly thick, but that's kind of what Dwight brings to the table. Is Dwight's really stocky, right? And so you combine that with LeBron, you know, being the physical freak that he is, and even like Avery Bradley's really strong, and he's got a long wingspan. Danny Green's big for a two. You know, if we can shoot well enough, we can be the type of team that you get the good parts of small ball while getting some of the good parts of a bigger lineup, right? Like, we see teams, especially down the stretch of games, go small so often. A guy like Anthony Davis will allow you to really not give that size up and still be able, like, he's just flying around the perimeter, hedging hard on screens. Golden State's different than most teams in that they run more off-ball screens than most teams do. Mm-hmm. And AD's like,
doesn't matter.
There were like three or four plays where a shooter could have taken a shot coming off of a screen, but they decided against it because AD was hedging high on them. And they know that if they try to drive past him, which is what you do to most bigs when they hedge high on that screen, he's still going to be able to recover to that. Yeah. So I'm super interested to see how they deploy AD on the defensive end, right? Because it gives us the potential to be able to be big while not suffering the reasons why teams don't go big in the first place.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Is he's huge, but he's one of like three human beings on the planet that teams can't really go small against and take full advantage of why you go small in the first place.
Right. While still being huge.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right. What was your second takeaway from this? Like, I really liked how it looked out there when LeBron was running point. I thought the Lakers looked really good out there when that was kind of the concept of the team. Now, they brought Rondo when he played something like 19,000 straight minutes. I don't know what the official stat on that is. But when it was LeBron out there running pseudo point guard, I don't know if Bradley's going to be able to shoot well enough for them to do that consistently with him as their primary point of attack of defender. But I really liked how that looked.
Yeah, no, that was, and I think that's what, you know, in the big time moments of the game, I really hope Vogel sees enough of and reconsiders those Rondo LeBron combos.
Yeah.
It's interesting. So, like, with Rondo, look, we've said our piece everybody who listens to the show knows where we stand on that. I'm going to really make an effort
just
to evaluate.
In case you don't. I'm anti-Rhonda, but go ahead.
I'm going to make a concerted effort to judge him on his play. And on the good side, like, you saw why him and Anthony Davis have chemistry. They hooked up several times. I thought Rondo tried on the defensive end, which is an upgrade from what was happening last year in that respect. There's still issues defensively and offensively, right? But if, like, I will be screaming less bloody murder if Rondo's playing. I've already accepted that he's going to play, right? Especially early on in the season. If it's with Anthony Davis, without LeBron James, at the beginning of the second quarter type of thing. The other thing that I thought of in evaluating that point guard situation was the guy who didn't play in Quinn Cook. Mm-hmm. He's the only guy amongst those three, amongst those four, with the other three being Bradley, Caruso, and Rondo, who can let it fly. Like, all three of the other guys, they have to have it be kind of like the situation and circumstances need to be just right for them to be, they have to be open to a certain degree to let that shot go, right? Mm-hmm. Quinn Cook can let it fly. There was one of the first three that Danny Green hit. He was going to his right, trying to spot up in the corner in transition, and LeBron found him, and he was not completely square to the basket when he let it go. And I was like, oh, that's a bad shot. Oh, he made it. Like, oh, that's right. That's what shooters look like, right?
Yeah.
And so Quinn Cook can do stuff like that from the point guard position. Now, he has some defensive deficiencies. I'm curious if some of our length can hide that.
Yeah.
Like, if he can just chase people off of the three-point line, we should be okay, and just make your rotations and not necessarily have to stay in front of guys. I think there may be some value there, but yeah, man, a lot of interesting stuff from just one game. I'm you know, sad that we have to wait so long for that next one. Bright and early on Thursday. Are you going to be up for that, Anthony? Are you going to wake up early for that preseason?
I don't know if it's necessarily that I'm going to wake up early or that I'm going to stay up late.
You'll be woken up, sure.
Yeah, and I'll be a little groggy, is what I'm saying.
Life of a new dad, right?
You'll
either stayed up late or woken up early.
I might have to, like, not tweet that game. Because I'm going to be delirious.
Yeah, but exercising good judgment like that would be totally off-brand for you.
Yeah,
so.
I do have expectations to live up to.
Yeah, I'll see you at 4:30 in the morning that day, tweeting something stupid.
Stupid my ass. It's mostly just going to be like, get Caruso in the game, which is like my final point to make here. Look, I understand that I do beat the Rondo drum. Like, I'm beating a dead horse. And by I'm beating a dead horse, I mean, like, I'm beating a physical dead horse in Rajon Rondo out there on defense. But but with Alex Caruso, that was one of my, like, my second hope. Like, my only serious hope going into the game was I would like to see Caruso out there alongside rotation level players. Now, it's only the first game. And that might have just been the Rondo game, right? Let's just see as much of Rondo as we can possibly see, and we'll put him through all of his scenarios out there, and then we'll give different looks over the course of training camp, right? Mm-hmm. That might have been the case. Two things made me nervous, though. One, Troy Daniels actually came out onto the court before Caruso did. Two, after the game, when Vogel was asked about the group that he saw in the second half, he lumped Caruso in with the other South Bay guys out there.
Mm-hmm. With his young guys, yeah.
Yeah, and that made me a little nervous. So we're going to take a quick second when we come back. I want your thoughts on both of those things and whether or not I'm freaking out and yelling that the sky is falling, that Frank Vogel is considering Alex Caruso to be a G League level player. Is the sky falling?
No.
Okay.
It's also not, you know, it's not going to be what we want it to be right away. When we talk about all of the politics and all of these things that we're aware of, that's, you know, this is how it looks, man. Yeah. Like Caruso having to climb the ladder to the top.
Yeah.
And
he just looks so much better.
Oh, well, I mean, he was the best player on the floor in the second half.
He was. Thank you. I thought the same thing.
And that's what, I mean, if we have a point about him, he kind of needs to be in mm-hmm. those situations, right? Yes. Like, be clearly the best guy out there. But that is like one of the first steps in NBA 2K when you've got your my player, right? You don't start out starting for the Lakers, right? You start out, you know, building up as a undrafted player and building your my player and getting reaching these different like achievements, right? Being the best player on the floor amongst a bunch of NBA or NBA adjacent type of guys. Like, that's one of those things, right? Yeah. He can't get to supplanting Rajon Rondo for backup point guard minutes before doing that first. So, like, Caruso did his job. His first play, made a really bad play. He passed up a spot up three, then rejected the JaVale pick and roll, tried to dump it off to him. And when he should have gone up, it was like three bad decisions back to back to back. Mm-hmm. And then he really improved on that going forward. So, you know, like, is Caruso going to be in the rotation to start out the season? I don't know. And that may be something that frustrates us. One thing that concerns me is that we're going to confuse our early schedule being favorable for certain things being effective, right? Mm-hmm. Be like, oh, well, we're 13-7, 14-6.
This was the Luke special with Josh Hart last year.
Sure, sure. You know, we've got this record. Why would we change anything? You don't make big changes when stuff like that happens. And then it would take another stretch. And then, you know, all of a sudden we're 60 games in the season, finally making the change that should have happened at the beginning of the year. Right. Mm-hmm. So that is a concern that I have, although, you know, it's better than the alternative. I'd rather win a lot of games, as many as we can, but it may be the difference between like a 13-7 versus a 15-5 or something like that. Right. So, anyway, yeah, I liked what I saw out of Caruso. I do have concerns, especially considering Quinn Cook was not part of that rotation and Caruso was still obviously relegated to that lower unit. But we knew this all along, man. Caruso was going to have to play significantly better than the veterans ahead of him in order to kind of crack that rotation.
The question I would want Frank Vogel to answer is, can his eyes be open to Caruso just being better, right? Like, what would it take? What does that look like? Is that something that's even a possibility? Because, like I said this in yesterday's show, and I would have liked to seen your reaction to it, but, like, if this is really Caruso being on the outside looking in of a rotation of guards, that is Rajon Rondo and then Avery Bradley playing out of position, Quinn Cook, who didn't exactly take the world by storm in big moments last year, like, this isn't like an insurmountable thing, and Caruso is just now immediately relegated to the outskirts of it. If I was his representation, I'd start saying, like, hey man, there are other teams interested. My guy needs to play at some point. This is now year three of this. 1 year behind Tyler Ennis, 2 years behind Rajon Rondo.
Bro, this is year one of him deserving it. He's gotten a lot better.
Well, but you're talking about deserving compared to like Tyler Ennis in years past and Rajon Rondo the last year. And now this year is another year of Rajon Rondo.
I mean, but that's the thing, is like Caruso has improved. Yeah. He was not that good 2 years ago. Last year he started, like, he was not great in the G League for much of the year. And then he balled out the last 15 games in the NBA. And it's like, okay, like, you've shown that you belong at this level, but like, it's way too early for like representation to be getting in the way. Like, and if he plays well enough, there are going to be enough players that, like, all right, you're showing me in action, where, and people will start advocating for him. He just got to keep his nose down and keep grinding at it, because I do think that, like you said, this is not a rotation that can't be cracked. This is not Lillard and McCollum ahead of him, right? Yeah. Like, if he keeps doing what he's doing, his time's going to come.
As his representation in the podcasting world. any last notes before we get on, we move on and start talking about the start of answering some questions?
No, just, you know, my main takeaway was that LeBron AD combo being so complimentary. You know, we talk a lot about individual talent, but the way they vibe off of each other, I mean, it was what we were hoping for. And how many times in the last few years of being a Laker fan has it actually worked out the way that we hoped it would?
Yeah.
Right. You know, let's knock on wood for health and all that. Yeah. Right. But in terms of their skill set, it was like, yes, that is exactly what I fantasized about for the last 5 months. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like that. Yes. Right. Right there. Exactly that.
That point can't be made strongly enough, because, like, we talk about other duos throughout the NBA, right? Like, the Paul George, Kawhi Leonard one comes up the most often because they're new, but they aren't exactly complementary. Not the way right. that LeBron and Anthony Davis are.
Not at all, no.
Even, like, you brought up C.J. McCollum and Damian Lillard. Not exactly complimentary in the way that LeBron and AD are.
Most of the other duos have to take turns doing mm-hmm. what they do. These two guys can be dominant at the same time off yeah. of each other. It's like Kobe and Powell on crack, man.
Right.
Like it's this just, or steroids, I suppose would be a better, crack, you know, crack can do amazing things. But that's going to be taken out of context in my mentions tomorrow. Yeah. Okay. I'm just going to shut up now. Please help me, save me.
I'm going to clip that specifically. No, I agree. It was great to see that. It was great to, and it also didn't feel forced. That also feels like worth mentioning here was that it didn't feel like LeBron and AD. It wasn't like LeBron was going out of his way to spoon feed AD. It's just going to happen. Yes. And it looked great.
Do you remember Powell's first game with the Lakers?
Yeah.
And that was my big takeaway from that. It's like, oh my God, he fits so perfectly next yeah. to Kobe, you know, like, and that,
even you know, Kobe, won us two remember titles. Kobe's post game thing?
Yeah. Like and Kobe scored like 6 points in that game or yeah. something like that. It broke some like crazy streak he'd had for consecutive double figures games. But yes. Yeah. That post game was great with Kobe.
Yeah. Kobe, does this solidify that you aren't going to be demanding out of here? What are you talking about, man? Of course not. All right. Let's answer a couple quick questions before we get out of here. First, from Manny2405, something that I feel hasn't been mentioned at all by anyone, but how do you guys think the Lakers free throw shooting will be this year with a whole new team? And also, Pete, you need to start eating pizza with pineapples. It really does go together.
Mm-hmm.
Agree. Are you concerned about the free throw shooting?
I'm always concerned about free throw shooting, man. We always talk about this with shooters too, right? Mm-hmm. 3-point shooters. This is where they go to die. The free throw shooting is always going to irritate me. Like LeBron had, you know, he's been playing 103 years in the NBA and, you know, he all of a sudden has his career low.
So you know? Weird.
So yes, I do have concerns, but I think they'll be better.
Somebody asked this question, and I can't quite find it here. I started to answer it, but it was more for the two of us. I think it was Assess the Threat, asked how we think NBA teams would handle it if the NBA said no more screens allowed.
If no more screens allowed?
Yeah, screens, on or off ball. No more screens.
That's kind of interesting to conceptualize.
Me too. I started by saying that, like, I would just run a bunch of rub cuts, right?
Like you'd run screens, right? Like it's like the NFL, right? Like you can't legally go up as a receiver and yeah. set a screen on your other receiver's guy and, you know, on a bubble screen.
But if you just happen to be standing there.
Yeah, just running around, you know? Yeah.
I think that's how it looks. And look, nobody should be shocked by me trying to, like, skirt the law. Like that. All right. Let's go with next question. Hi, Anthony and Pete. Fun, hypothetical, fun question. Knowing the Lakers' lack of guard depth, if the Brooklyn Nets randomly called the Lakers and offered Spencer Dinwiddie for Kyle Kuzma straight up, would you do it?
Ooh.
I don't think Brooklyn does that.
Right.
But
and you have to have more under the cap.
So if it was like Kuzma and it'd probably be like what? Caldwell Pope to make contracts work?
I probably don't do that because of that, right? Because you have to add another rotation guy.
I don't think KCP's a rotation guy. But yeah.
Oh, KCP's gonna be a rotation guy this year. I'm
he looked awful. That.
I mean
he looks so bad.
KCP has a tendency to do that. But he will be in the Lakers rotation. Yeah. I'm fairly certain of that. That's really, really good. I'm like right on the border. And to me, like to make a trade, you have to go like, yes, yeah, that's mm-hmm. we should do that. And so I would say no on that. But that's a great hypothetical.
I disagree. I would jump at it immediately. Jump at it like as soon as I could pull off that trade, I would do that really quickly. But the thing that does, though, is that makes you extremely thin at small forward.
But that's part of it, yes.
But, like, even on that point, like, that opens up another roster spot so that the buyout market opens up and you now have the opportunity to sign an extra small forward.
But buyout for who? Like, the buyout market is not as robust as we make it out to be sometimes. Yeah. You know, like, if Iggy becomes available and we sign him and then you have the opportunity to make a trade like that, then you know, consider that a little more heavily. But the Lakers have depth at the guard position, at the point guard position. Like, they're all backups, ideally, right? Mm-hmm. And somebody, one of them is going to have to start. But, you know, you take Kuz out of that equation, and, like, who do you have on the wing?
Yeah.
It's LeBron and
Rondo.
Whenever in doubt, it's going to be Rondo this year, I have a feeling.
To continue that point, if there is a circumstance that Kyle Kuzma gets traded, this is from Shusha's, what does that look like?
I think the scenario that listener came up with Dinwiddie, like, it looks like a guard who basically, our guards are not up to snuff. They are, you know, nobody really emerges as a, like, this guy really deserves big minutes. And we're looking for that to put us over the hump. And I think that that's what we're hoping for anyway. But if Kuz gets moved, it needs to be for a lead guard type of guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, while covering our butts on the wing to, you know, to mitigate it, you know, the loss that we'd have from losing him. So, yeah, that, I think if that happens, that's what it needs to look like. The problem, though, is that Kuz is making $2 million.
Yeah.
And you've got to add a lot of salary to get to a guy who's worth trading Kuzma for.
Yeah. I don't see it. I don't see Kuzma being traded for a couple of reasons. One, the Lakers are just really high on him. Like, they're not going to be realistic about his value on the trade market.
I agree. If I could jump in, I agree. I also think there's an immediacy to this year that, like, none of the production from anyone here can be theoretical now or long-term down the road, right? Like, people don't remember this, but the Lakers signed Shaq in that summer of 96. They still had Cedric Ceballos on the team, and he was an all-star. He had led the team in scoring for 2 years. Mm-hmm. You know, guys scoring 20, 24 points a game in that range, right? Like, that's a really good player. That's the guy your team was built around the last 2 years.
Scored 50 once, I think.
Scored 50 in a game. Yeah, made the all-star team one of those years. Like, he was a really good player for the Lakers.
Cal State Fullerton, great.
That's right. 8 games into that first year with Shaq, it was pretty obvious he didn't get fit, that he didn't fit. Robert Horry throws a towel in Danny Ainge's face, which makes him even more of a Laker legend, right? In when Ainge was his coach in Phoenix, so they had to trade Horry, right? But that's one of those things that, you know, people, has been lost to history in a lot of ways. But I always love that visual of Horry, like, Ainge was saying some whiny bullshit, I'm sure. I don't know, but that's my guessing. Yep. And Horry just grabs, like, one of the white towels, right, and just throws it right in Ainge's face and just nails them. Anyway, so they had to trade Horry. We move Ceballos for Horry, and he's like our stretch four, our closing four for, you know, the three-peat. So if Kuz does not fit in, I'm curious how much rope that gets or how much they start looking for, hey, we know that as Spencer Dinwiddie will be reliable or somebody of that ilk to fill this other hole that we have on the team.
I don't care if Danny Ainge was asking for a towel. Like, I am pro Robert Horry hitting him in the face with a towel, no matter what the circumstance was.
That's right.
But the other point that I was going to make here with Kuzma is that he's hurt. So, like, the Lakers are already going to overvalue him, I think, to a certain extent. And the market isn't exactly there for a player who we don't know when he'll be back or what he looks like when he is back. So,
sure. I mean, he should be back relatively early in the season if he misses the early season at all. But yeah, like, right now, he's definitely not going to get traded.
Yep. All right. Let's end on a funner one. Okay. So, Vegas Richard writes, "Hey, Anthony and Pete, I was watching TV and started watching Laker top 10 rivals. And of course, number one was the Celtics. My question is, do you think the Lakers Celtics rivalry will respark this year or in the near future with Celtics having some homegrown team with Tatum and Brown and the Lakers having our star driven roster? Also, what are some of your Lakers Celtics memories or your favorite Lakers Celtics memories?" I don't think it's going to be a rivalry this year because I don't think the Celtics are good enough to care about.
Right. Like, I think they're going to be a good team. They probably have better chemistry than they did last year, and that will matter to a degree. They just don't have the interior defense. Like, I just don't know how they get past in Milwaukee, how they get past Philly without Horford, with Horford on Philly, in fact.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't think that that rivalry will be too significant. Their homegrown talent is not good enough to, I don't think they'll ever be good enough to be leading, you know, championship contending type teams, and certainly not now. In terms of my favorite memories, like, it's, you know, it's cliche, but that 2010 game seven is, you know, right at the top. Although favorite, we've talked about this before, about how that game took years off of my life because it was so damn stressful. But just, you know, just seeing Kobe chase down the ball at the end and the confetti start to come down and just like that relief. And, you know, because it was after 08, they had that great run in 08 where they had no business getting to the finals in the first place, but they got really far. They get all the way to the finals, then get rolled in, you know, in that game six. And then the Garnett gets hurt in 09, so he doesn't play in the playoffs. Lakers beat Orlando, which was great, right? But then finally conquering the Celtics 2 years after they got beat in six was really gratifying. How about you, man?
Yeah, Kendrick Perkins be damned. That was an incredible moment. I also remember a moment from my childhood where at the time the Lakers had this, like, this thing for any time Nick Van Exel hit a three-pointer, they donated so much money to charity or something like that. Or and they used to have, like, this Nick Van Exel counter, basically, for the number of threes he would make. And the Lakers played in Boston. Actually, I have two memories of this. But the Lakers played in Boston. It came down to the wire, and Van Exel hit, like, a 40-footer to win the game. And that was just, I was beside myself. He was my favorite player at the time anyway, and he hits that shot. It was just, it was so effing cool.
Yeah, that was it was in 95, last game at the Garden for the Lakers. Yeah, a turnaround three from the right side, about 35 feet out. Bucket, Del Harris talking like all gangster, like Del Harris was cracking me up and just... Yeah, that was a great moment.
Another honorable mention here was Kobe getting MVP chance in the Garden.
Oh, of course.
I mean, if you've never seen that YouTube video, freaking find it. It's a delight. I think I might make it my ringtone, actually. Is Kobe getting those chants in the... And what's great is if you guys have any Celtics fans, bring that up to them. Because they love to pride themselves on, oh, we have the best fans, most intelligent fans, best fan base, whatever, blah, 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 blah. Chowda. and... That happened in your building, man. Never act like that didn't happen.
That's right. And that'll never happen in Staples the other way around. No. Right? Like, you'll never have enough Celtics fans there to take it over the way Lakers fans did on that night.
Yeah. It was funny, too, because, like, they tried to, like, chant down the MVP chants, and then Laker fans just got louder. I love our fan base. They're the best.
Yes.
All right. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Fun episode for this one. We have some time to kill before the next game, so we are going to continue to open up the mailbag. We still have a few questions here to go there. We have hopefully a preview coming, you know, one of those finals previews. We still have player previews to get to as well, so plenty of stuff to stick around for. Welcome back, all of you who are making your way back and getting ready for the season. If you guys have... any interest in a Kings season preview after this show ends, wait a few seconds, and we are going to add a Kings season preview from the new Locked On Kings hosts. So we're excited about that addition to the network as well. So have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
If you're listening to this right now, then you already like sports. And perhaps even you already like Los Angeles sports. Then, oh boy, do I have something for you. My name is Sarah, and I am the host of Locked On Los Angeles Kings, part of the Locked On Podcast Network's new expansion into NHL programming. I'll be bringing you shows 5 days a week covering the two-time Stanley Cup champion Los Angeles Kings as they continue the rebuild in hopes of achieving that elusive third Stanley Cup. You already know how Locked On works and what we have to offer, so let me give you a quick preview instead of three things you can expect this season from the Kings. First, chaos. Think that's not something to look forward to? Think again. The Kings spent last year being, admittedly, totally inept. They couldn't score goals or keep themselves from being scored on. But this season, with a new coach who aims to hold players accountable for their work on and off the ice, the Kings are looking to at least improve on the scoring part. They scored 5 goals in their first game of the season, and while they still didn't win, for the first time in a long time, it looked like they could at least be entertaining. Of course, given that they scored 5 goals and still lost, defense looks like it's going to be a challenge. Second, we've got drama. Last season, there was an abrupt coaching turnover, an interim coach who was in over his head, and almost every single player on the roster underachieved. At the end of the season, one of the players called some of their efforts that year pathetic. How can the Kings even top that? I have no idea, but I'm sure they're going to try. Look, let's not kid ourselves. The Kings aren't expected to be very good this year. So that means a whole season of questions and speculation on who's going to leave the team via trades and what kind of promising young players the team will receive back instead. And third, we've got some good old-fashioned rivalries. Even if the Kings struggle in the standings again this year, there's plenty of chances to cheer for them against their California competition, the Anaheim Ducks and the San Jose Sharks. And the newfound rivals, the Vegas Golden Knights, are already very easy to hate. Want to get a Kings fan mad? Then go talk about how Staples Center gets swarmed with Vegas fans every time the teams meet. If you have to hear one more time all of those people yelling "Night" during the national anthem, like, come on. Talk about a team you love to hate. When any of these teams meet, you can always look forward to tons of action and lots of bad blood. So I'll be keeping tabs on the Los Angeles Kings all season long, 5 days a week, bringing you shows all about the team, their prospects, and what to expect next from them. You can follow along at Locked On LA Kings on Twitter, and make sure you subscribe to Locked On Los Angeles Kings on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you find all of your favorite shows. Locked On Los Angeles Kings, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.